Hello, and welcome to the Development Debrief with Catherine Van Sickle, the stories-based podcast that interviews donors, thought leaders, and professionals in the field of fundraising. Happy 2024. We're starting a fresh year with plenty of work and lots of new voices to hear on the Development Debrief. The first episode of the year is a little bit special because today is our guest's birthday. Chad, happy birthday. I hope you have a wonderful day. And if you like this episode, reach out to him, wish him a happy birthday, and send him some well wishes. So today's episode is featuring Chad Paris. His firm that he shares with his partner and wife is called Paris Leaf. I talk with him about how Paris Leaf was formed, the different iterations that it took on over the years, and how the business got started. Their motto is that money is mission fuel in the right hands, and he will talk more about that. But I've always wondered how a campaign is born, who decides on the slogan, what is an institution's authentic voice. Of course, as you know, I have a podcast, and so I'm very interested in entrepreneurship. And so it was fun for me to dig into how they got going, how they landed on fundraising, and how they're building their relationships in their own business. So a little bit more about today's guest. With over 15 years of experience in brand, digital, and fundraising, Chad is the CEO of Paris Leaf, a branding agency that helps nonprofits fund progress through branding their major fundraising campaigns. His passion is in making connections between humans or between seemingly disparate pieces of a puzzle. Chad has dedicated his career to brands that are changing the world. As CEO, he supports the firm's ultimate ambition to help their partners raise $25 billion by the end of the decade. Let's get started. Hi, Chad. Welcome to the Debrief.
Hi, thanks, Catherine. Thanks for having me.
So excited to talk to you about your work and your business. But first, tell us where you're talking to us from.
So I am in sunny Gainesville, Florida. That is how we refer to it, as sunny Gainesville, Florida. And if you actually meet the people in Gainesville, you'll see why, because, you know, sun's always shining and it's always smiles on their face. We get winter maybe 2.5 weeks out of the year, so we actually have a fireplace we get to use for a couple of days.
Yes,
some refer to it as the swamp. I prefer to forget that I am in the swamp. But we are in sunny Gainesville, Florida.
Have you ever seen an alligator?
I have seen many alligators. The question is, have I seen one today? And the answer is no, but I have seen one this week. Wow. They're everywhere. Yes. But they're not like crocodiles. They don't attack you.
No. Yes. So you're in Florida, but the work that you're doing is actually grown to being international, which is so exciting. So I'm going to really dive in and maybe even have a little version or a riff on how I built this, which is one of my favorite podcasts. So let's start with Paris Leaf. You are the principal and CEO. What is your business?
Well, for starters, I want to say I am one of the principals. This is really important because there would be no Paris Leaf if it weren't for the other principal. Okay. So how I built this is, for starters, I found another really good principal. So my partner in business is also my partner in life, Allie, a little shout out. And, you know, our founding story is somewhat simple and complex at the same time. You know, in 2010, we were kind of coming out of a pretty collapsed economy. I wouldn't say I was taking, you know, dead end jobs, but, you know, I was, you know, working for a couple of firms where I got a chance to really cut my teeth. I think it was dead end for me in that, you know, it was really tough cultures where we were working, where I was working at a couple of different firms I was working at. And while I was learning a ton really fast at a really young age, and being exposed to a lot and being given a ton of amazing opportunities, one of the things that I started to notice and recognize was that it was very much this kind of dog eat dog, you know, style culture that really just didn't enjoy coming to work. You know, I was thinking, you know, on some days I would come home going, I'm way too young to be this stressed out, you know, and I can't think straight. And at the same time, my partner, Allie, was in the world of academia. So as you can imagine, her life wasn't stressful at all, going to get a PhD in cognitive neuroscience. And so between the two of us, I think, you know, working at, you know, in some pretty stressful industries and organizations. And around that time, we noticed that there were a lot of really young founders starting businesses. You know, Gainesville is actually a very entrepreneurial community, and, you know, a lot of 20 somethings and 20 nothings starting businesses, some dropping out of college and just going for it and raising big money. And, you know, so we kind of got pulled into the startup craze and excitement. You know, I think for a moment I thought I wanted to be the next Zuck. And, you know, that's, you know, to some degree, what Paris Leaf, not that we were supposed to be a social media firm, but, you know, the next very successful entrepreneur, but yeah. Mind you, you know, almost 14 years ago. Yeah. I think one day Allie and I were on a walk and the moment just struck and was like lightning in a bottle. And it was really simple. It was like, why don't we do this just you and me? You know, why don't we team up? And it was really cool. And I think that was really the onus was this moment of realizing we are such a good team. You know, Allie and I both grew up playing team sports. And, you know, whenever we'd get into a little tiff or something, we would give each other a high five and remind each other, okay, we're on the same team, you know? And so both growing up playing team sports, we realized like, wow, you know, everywhere where I'm challenged, you kind of fit right in as far as your strengths. And everywhere where you're challenged, you know, I fit in as far as my strengths. And so we just decided to break off at, you know, early 20s and do it on our own. So I think that was really the beginning of it all. It was more out of a desire to create a really cool company with a great work culture. And to us, the widget initially really didn't matter. You know, it was just, we just want to do something together.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of the beginning of Paris Leaf. We did have a widget, very, very different than what it is today. It was an eco-friendly online printing company, and it has evolved many times over the years, very quickly into the agency that it is today. So,
and is Leaf Allie's last name?
No, we get that question a lot.
Do you?
So yeah, we do. It's funny, especially as a firm that does, you know, we're a branding agency. We do naming for a living. It's hysterical. You know, the way we named our firm was, we just kind of mashed together a bunch of words and looked on GoDaddy to see what .coms were available.
Yeah.
So it's a confession, but, you know, it kind of rolled off the tongue. It was really nice. And it we had a big focus off. On... It does. And it's very memorable. It's very unique. You know, a lot of agencies, it's like, you know, and, you know, name, last name and last name.
Right.
Or, you know, tech companies are just kind of these like obscure words, you know, mashed together. But for us, it was about, we wanted to be, you know, a family friendly, you know, awesome culture organization. And initially, you know, major focus on the environment and sustainability.
Yeah.
So that's where the Leaf came from. And since then, we've really kind of zoomed out to be much more of a global focus and a much more kind of just generally philanthropic spirited organization.
When you decided to come together and do this, do you think it was in some ways just being young with some blind ambition, or did you have concerns about where it would lead and how it would grow? I mean, it's very inspiring to hear that you just chose to do this, because I think a lot of people are held back by fears and the what ifs.
We got really lucky in a lot of ways. You know, for starters, again, very entrepreneurial community, had access to unbelievable mentors. And also my folks were, my parents were both entrepreneurs growing up. And so... Okay. Funny enough, and ironically, actually, almost all of my siblings now, I'm one of four, a cousin. So one of, you know, sorry, not one of four. There's four more. So I'm one of five and then a cousin who came to live with us. So basically five and a half. And I think five of us are entrepreneurs.
Wow. Okay.
So it, you know, it's genetic.
That you grew up in and around.
To some degree. But, you know, I think it was something that just came together over time. For us, though, we're early 20s. We have this idea. You know, we say to my folks, like, hey, we're thinking about doing this. We have no money. You know, what do you think? And they're like, well, you're never going to have a time in your life where you have less overhead. You have less to lose because you're literally starting from nothing. You know, you have no money, so you have no money to lose. And, you know, your monthly nut is really low. So now's kind of the time, now's really the prime time to do it. And so, yeah, I think that was kind of the push that we needed. So yeah. I think we were really fortunate in starting at such a young age. But I think for me also, candidly, I was always a really bad employee, Catherine, and I couldn't understand why. Hmm. And I think what I came to realize was I'm just not built to work for other people, which is really funny because, you know, to a certain degree, you could argue I work for our partners, our clients now, you know.
Yeah.
But I think I didn't realize, you know, like I'm not just some rebel without a cause. I'm just an entrepreneur, you know. And as soon as that moment struck, as soon as that lightning in a bottle moment struck, it's like, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I get it. Like finally, professionally, I understand why. Like I'm not a broken employee. I'm just not an employee. So I think it was just kind of a perfect combination of a lot of different elements that really came together all at once. But again, I want to highlight, like, I had the right partner at the right time, you know, at the right time in our lives with the right mentors and the right market. Like there was a lot of you know, privilege in there in a lot of ways.
I do think when big ideas happen and they are executed well, it is like a lightning strike moment of a lot of factors that have been brewing. And so it's great to hear you validate that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I describe it as the oxygen getting sucked out of the room. For me, I know that it's right when it's so odd. I get sick to my stomach. Mm. It's the most bizarre sensation. But like there have been a couple of campaigns where it's like, there it is. Like I knew it that moment. I knew like come hell or high water, this is what it's got to be. Because, you know, it was just so obvious, just everything just came together. And that was one of those moments where everything came together. It was just like, there it is. That makes perfect sense.
So today you're working on fundraising campaigns internationally for different organizations of all sizes. How did you develop that expertise and how did you land on that? I mean, you've sort of talked about it a little bit, but how did you find the philanthropic space?
Ask any fundraiser, how'd you get into fundraising? And, you know, typically you'll get some variation of the answer. You know, I didn't get into fundraising. Fundraising got to me, you know, just kind of found me.
I fell into it.
Yeah, yeah. You hear that all the time. And as an agency, you know, we fell into it as well. I do want to say, you know, we are designing our firm to be a globally focused organization. We want our ultimate ambition. First and foremost, we want to help our partners raise $25 billion by the end of the decade. We hit 6.5 this year. When we first started, we were at 3.2. So in 3 years, in our first 10 years, we got to 3.2. In the last three, we went from 3.2 to 6.5.
Awesome.
Next year, we want to do 10. We want to be at 10. And so by the end of the decade, shooting for $25 billion. So our focus, our purpose as a firm is we believe money is mission fuel in the right hands, and we aim to be the right hand to those right hands, to those very right hands. The outcome of that, we believe that if we help our partners raise a ton of money, that if we get that $25 billion number, that we will become known globally as the go-to agency for branding major fundraising campaigns. So we are not global yet, but we have done work internationally as a shop, particularly before we position for this. But to your earlier question, I mean, I think even to some degree, any good professional, you know, that is successful has a willingness and a flexibility to pivot, you know, to see an opportunity and to pivot. And I think that has probably been one of the greatest elements of our success. And I say that word with all the humility of my heart and the understanding that success is subjective. But the reason why I feel like today we are successful as a firm has largely been because of our flexibility and willingness to pivot. And, you know, we started, it's hysterical, it's almost embarrassing to say this, we started as an eco-friendly online printing company, Catherine. That was the original business plan. And it's so funny. I mean, we did, it's called the poor person's copyright. It's a terrible term for it, but that's kind of the term. You basically mail yourself up, you know, something, and that's, you know, because it's sealed and, you know, dated, through the post office. You can open that in court. I don't know if that actually holds to this day, but we did that with our original business plan. And it was one page, single-sided, double-spaced. And it was like the most simple thing ever. And comical, we opened it on our five-year anniversary because we just changed so much in that period. So
we had setbacks?
Tons of setbacks. Yeah, tons of setbacks. So in the first 6 months, we went from eco-friendly online printing to brand and digital. And then we've been off and running ever since. We worked on a ton of different fundraising campaigns. And I would say the pandemic really was probably our biggest setback. I mean, you know, we had a setback early on that was like, oh my gosh, are we going to make it as a firm? That was probably within the first year. You know, we were still trying to figure it out, still trying to dial it in, still trying to understand the market. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest setback for us was definitely the pandemic. You know, we were a generalized branding agency that had done a lot of these fundraising campaigns, but we hadn't gone all in on it. And I think we were really scared to go all in on anything. But the pandemic laid us out and just put our backs against the wall. And Allie and I called it, you know, pushing all of our chips in on this niche and this vertical. And we finally said, we have to do something because it's really hard to break out of this regional market and do the level of national and international work that we want to do. As soon as we did that, you know, it was a game changer, but, you know, leading up to that, it was a massive risk. And to a certain degree, I mean, I joke that, like, you know, we had to go out of business and like almost rebuild the firm entirely because from the ground up, I mean, the people that we were hiring, how we were training, the culture, I mean, we shut down our physical office space. So much changed. And it's like an entirely new business than it was 3 years ago. New leadership, new positioning. So yeah, it was initially a massive setback, but this year, you know, we surpassed our pre-pandemic numbers, which is huge. It's a really, really big deal for us. So, you know, it's a real comeback story. It's, you know, we really kind of came back from the dead in a lot of ways, and it took a lot of grit and resilience, but just really, I'm proud of my partner. I'm proud of the team for just believing in this. And I feel like, you know, we did it and there's still so much more to do.
And you're just getting started.
Industry. Yeah. We feel like we're just getting started. And yeah, I feel like we have the energy of teenagers, you know, as an agency. So, yeah.
Well, I love the image of pushing your chips in. And I just wonder, why was it? Because you enjoyed those campaigns? Was it because it was mission driven? Yeah. I mean, you could have chosen anything at that point.
I love this question. So we had a project manager work for us for a while that talked about the kind of projects you talk about around the Thanksgiving table. And whenever we thought about the kind of projects we talk about around the Thanksgiving table, the things that, you know, when we look back and reflected on the year, we always came back to the work we were doing in the nonprofit sector. And when we were thinking about how to position our firm, there's a ton of branding agencies in the nonprofit sector, but we had a ton of really great experience in the fundraising campaign space within the nonprofit sector. And when we kind of peeled back later that onion, we saw this is an amazing market with unbelievable people that, like, literally they're on the firing lines. I mean, you as a fundraiser can attest to this, that are the spirit of these nonprofits in a lot of ways, that are like the face of these organizations and some of the most mission-driven people. So we saw it, we found it, we had experience in it, and we got really lucky in that way. We fell in love, and it was just, it was a no-brainer. And when we stumbled on it, it was almost like, oh my God, how do we not see this sooner? You know? And at the same time, it came together exactly as it was supposed to. It's just been a beautiful ride. I mean, it's been incredible to see the receptivity of this market to what we're doing.
So as you've zoomed in and focused, and as you said, you know, chosen this niche, what has surprised you about our industry? Because it's a funny one. I mean, there's definitely some quirks to how we do things.
You know, I'll tell you what surprised me is how buttoned up we are. On one hand, I get it. We have to be as non-offensive as possible when you're speaking to a donor, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I get to know these people in an incredibly personal way as a trusted partner, a trusted advisor. There's this beautiful, authentic spirit with all of these people that we do have to tighten up when we're in front of donors. And I totally get that. And I, again, I understand the non-offensive nature. You know, we're just but a conduit, right? A lot of the times we're just a connector, you know, to a lot of times the figurehead of the organizations that we as fundraisers are working at. But I'd say that's been the biggest surprise for me, is just how buttoned up we are.
So do you find that you're often pushing your clients to go outside of their comfort zone?
Yes, but at the right times.
Right.
You know, I think putting on a mask is exhausting. Our jobs are exhausting. I liken it to sprinting a marathon. You know, when it comes to fundraising campaigns, right? It's the phrase that I coin, I talk about all the time. This really is like sprinting marathons, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That in itself is exhausting. Putting on a mask at work is twice as exhausting. It's doubly exhausting. But being able to take that mask off on occasion when it's appropriate is reinvigorating. I think lack of authenticity really leads to burnout. And that is probably the number one thing that as workers, I think, period, not just as fundraisers, like workers, period, need to watch out for is burnout. You know, that is serious mental health issues. And if we talk about it, our organizations attracting and retaining the right kind of talent, like authenticity is a factor that we need to keep our finger on the pulse of regularly. And so I think just looking for those moments to create a safe space for folks to be authentic while understanding that there's a time and a place. You know, there's a time and a place to have a good time, to be silly, to be less buttoned up, be a little bit more loose, to be professional. You know, I'm not saying be offensive. And then put on your game face. I totally get that.
Yeah, but I do think the older the institution is, the less flexibility it feels like you have to try something new. Yeah. So I'd love if you could talk us through your process. You know, let's say you've just signed on a new client. They are, as we always say, launching their most ambitious effort and historic goal.
Yeah. Catherine, I've never heard anybody say, but we're launching our second most ambitious or our least ambitious. Yeah.
So what happens? What's the process?
For starters, I want to say that so our whole ethos is about being partners. So like right out of the gate, when you first meet us, the very first conversation, we start using the word partner, not vendor, not client, you know, and we even correct ourselves a lot. So we refer to our clients as partners. I would say day zero, we are immersing ourselves into the spirit of the organization, into everything that we can find that's been written, strategic plan, feasibility studies, executive summary reports, strategic plan for the fundraising arm, as well as the organization, videos on the president, the vice president, major donors, really consuming as much as we can, the brand guide for the organization, right? Because a lot of times, most of the time, the brands that we're building for these campaigns have to be complementary to the organization's brand. So consuming as much as we can, from there, we kick off. And we like to say strategy starts with figuring out who you're going to talk to, you know? So for us, we do this massive immersion process where, as we like to say, you're speeding down the highway at 1,000 miles an hour as the partner, we got to catch up to you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So our immersion process is consuming all of that data and information that's already out there, and then figuring out who are the right people that we're going to talk to. And it's the folks that we like to refer to as the ones who really get it. You know, it's like, those are two really key words, the ones that get it. So after that, we're caught up to speed. We've delivered a report. You know, the takeaway is yes, our partners perish understand who we are. From there, we then move into messaging and positioning. So this is really the entire ethos of the campaign, what we call the 10 questions every campaign brand must answer. That helps frontline fundraisers figure out, how do we talk about this thing? First and foremost, why are we doing this? You know, why should you support us? Why now? You know, why us? Second is, you know, what is this thing? It is the easiest question. Like, what is the campaign? And more often than not, whenever we're asked for our elevator pitch, it's just, you know, it's just word salad, right? And so how do we simplify that messaging as much as possible? And so there's about, you know, eight other questions. The last one being, what impact do we hope to create in the world as a result of this campaign? So we answer all those questions. We figure out the campaign theme. We dial that in. Then we do the exact same thing on the visual side. And we figure out, all right, what is the visual system we're going to wrap around this campaign? From there, we move into the rules and tools, brand guide and toolkit, and then we build out the case for support. So this is really the final source of truth. We take the case statement, we bring it into the final case for support as our source of truth document for the campaign. And this is the living, breathing document that is built out that will evolve as the campaign, the economy, leadership evolves and changes as new priorities present themselves, new faculty come in. And then we move into what we call the campaign activation. And that's where we really get to bring this thing to life. So that first phase is, you know, that is the campaign brand foundation. The next phase is the campaign activation. And that's where we get to build out all the fun strategies and tools for how we're going to help you raise big bucks and help you raise big money with major donors and major gifts. So that's where we get to get into some really fun stuff, the anthem videos, talking about, you know, the public face kickoff events, the campaign microsites. You know, we just did a huge pop-up card that was really neat. It was this 9x12 pop-up card that was it was for a surgical tower. We just gotten a named donor. Our partners had just landed a named donor. And so, you know, big bold letters at the top of this tower. And it was what we called a please and thank you card. It was a, you know, please can we sit down and talk with you about this really cool surgical tower, and or on the flip side, you know, thank you for meeting with us, it was such a pleasure. So just kind of looking for those nice stewardship moments, those moments to just really wow people. So that's kind of the essence of the process. But I do want to say it's the people at the end of the day. I mean, it's not a whole lot different from a lot of other agencies' process. What makes us different and our process different is, as a client of ours once said, garbage in, garbage out. And so it's so important that the people that are driving the process, if they understand the world of fundraising, if they're developed and trained to understand the world of fundraising the way we do, then they're looking at it from a totally different lens than a typical creative would.
Yeah. What is the most challenging part of what you just described? I feel like taglines have got to be really hard. And I feel like there's so much pressure on the names of naming the campaign. What's your view?
That's not as challenging. I think it really, funny enough, the most challenging is getting on people's schedules sometimes. Everybody's so busy, you know, and the president of the organization, CEO, the chair of the board, you know, people need to be bought in. These are very, very busy people. But, you know, aside from that, and I'll say this next thing, challenging, but it's a fun challenge. This is a challenge we really like, is socialization. You know, is like figuring out how to socialize the work and bringing in the right people at the right times and the right stages in the process so people see themselves in the work. They're bought in, they're proud of it, they see their voice in it, they feel like they've had an opportunity to weigh in. And there's, as a result, if you socialize successfully, then people will be bought in to that positioning for the rest of the campaign. But if they're cut out, you know, if you do this in a silo, in a bubble, people won't be bought in. And as a result, you will have a less successful campaign. I don't have data to back that up, but I can tell you, I've heard of countless campaigns where a dean or a provost says, oh, well, this was done without our involvement or a conversation with us at all. So I don't see myself in this. So they're going to go off and do their own thing as a result. So I would say that's the biggest challenge, but to me, that's a really fun challenge. I like navigating bureaucracy and politics and red tape and big egos. It's a lot of fun for us. I mean, we need to be in love with that kind of work.
It sounds like you'd be a good fundraiser.
Well, we work really, really hard to understand this world. And we bring in expert fundraisers all the time. We spend a lot of time with fundraisers so that we can really sympathize best we can.
What does that socialization look like? How much of it is in person versus like online meetings or?
This is the beauty of Zoom. So yeah, I think digitally a lot of times is fine. A lot of people have gotten really comfortable with that. In person, sometimes still, especially if it's a really important one, you know, homage needs to be paid, respect needs to be paid. So in person can happen. Yeah, I would say, you know, for us, I joke that half of our process is creativity and the other half is politics. You know, it's from the very beginning, we go into the process knowing there's going to be politics involved. And so we are very intentional about, okay, who are the folks that we need to talk to get their buy-in? You know, who are the folks that we need in the room with us helping to shape the vision of the campaign? Because we have a workshopping methodology that really drives our entire creative process. And we're bringing the right people into those meetings to make sure they see themselves in this campaign, that they're bought in. And then, you know, as we're rolling out that work, we're presenting it at the right moments. And that is a lot of times like campaign naming, that's a very iterative process. Mm-hmm. You never land on it the first time. You know, you're lucky if you land on it the second time. It's typically the third or fourth try. And if it's done correctly, there's a lot of collaboration and buy-in and ownership from the partner that you're working with. So yeah, so every single stage, you know, it's okay, who do we need bought in? You know, who are the ones that can really put the kibosh on this thing? And then let's figure out, you know, when we're going to meet with them, at what stage, how finalized does this need to be, and how much of a work in progress do we need this to be? And we need to play to their strengths as well. You know, some people, like if we're talking to an engineer who's a campaign committee chair, we need to understand they're very pragmatic thinkers, right? And so what you present to them, it has to be presented in context, right? So you have to know your audience really, really well. So again, challenge, but it's one that we're really obsessed with.
And I'm sure it's different depending on the project, but what kind of timeline are we talking about here?
It's funny. I usually say 4 to 8 months, and that hyphen depends on the client. We could get the work done a lot faster, you know, if we have a small decision-making team, but that's just not reality. If it's a smaller nonprofit, lower end of that. If it's a large organization that we're working with, large institution, a lot of different stakeholders, that we need a lot of different, you know, buy-in from different folks, that's going to take longer. So you're going to be on the higher end. That's for the campaign brand foundation part. But where partnership kicks in is we're there for the entirety of the campaign, supporting the campaign communications team. And so, you know, our work could go on for years, and a lot of times, about 50% of the time, it does.
How many projects are you able to support at once between you and your partner? Are you looking to grow? All I'm thinking about is sustainability.
Yeah. It's an excellent question. It's one that we get often. We're much more focused on just larger campaigns that we can immerse ourselves in a lot more. So our volume tends to be a lot smaller, you know, just out of the nature of, you know, we have to be able to be very up close and personal. That said, you know, naturally as we grow, I'm not as involved as I was a couple of years ago in every single campaign in the nitty gritty, but that's part of growing an organization. And so it's really important that, you know, so we just hired a new vice president of strategy. He's been our client at two different organizations. He was the president of the foundation, and at the next shop, he was the chief advancement and marketing officer for a $400 million campaign for Performing Arts Center. So, you know, this guy knows both us as an agency, and he knows what it's like to sit on your side of the table. So we're hiring some wicked experienced and talented, smart people. You know, if I'm going to start to step back, our partners need to have the utmost confidence in the folks that are stepping into the day-to-day. Mm-hmm. That said, I keep my finger on the pulse of every single campaign that we're working on. And you know, our partners have direct access to me at all times. It's really important to me. So I would say we're going to grow as big as we can while making sure that we maintain two things, relationship and quality. Those are the two most fundamental things that if any of those break, we will not achieve our ambition I was talking about earlier, becoming known globally for this. So we'll only grow as fast as that allows us to, that, you know, not breaking relationships, not breaking quality.
Yeah. I want to go back to something you said earlier. You've mentioned authenticity a couple of times, and you said that if there isn't the authenticity there, the whole process is more exhausting and everyone is more tired. And I totally agree. I think you're so right. But I want to hear more about that. Like, how do you find it? You know, what if the organization isn't sure what that is? You know, we see so much turnover. Yeah. There's so many moving factors. So how do you figure that out?
For starters, we're in a differentiation obsessed industry. And this is something that's really irked me about the industry that we aim to change. But it's also a philosophy and a theory that we're testing. It just, but it seems to make sense.
So tell us what you mean by that.
Yeah, I think that the industry has become very obsessed with finding, like, how can we say something that nobody else can say, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that we're letting the desire to be a unique snowflake drive our communications efforts, right? As opposed to really looking in the mirror and going, who are we? Because that's why folks come to us. That's why students enroll. That's why, you know, donors support. That is why, you know, alumni are obsessed, is because of who we authentically are as an organization. And this is something that I think, you know, is one of the, maybe the only benefits that came out of social media, is it commanded authenticity. If you as an organization were not who you say you are, you're going to get canceled, plain and simple. Like, you're going to get demolished on social media. And, you know, social media gives voices a platform, you know? And so I think that's actually a great thing. I think we, as organizations, we need to take a good hard look in the mirror and ask ourselves, who are we, you know? What has been the reason for our success, and build the campaign brand foundation, build the brand of the organization around our authenticity and not just around, you know, what do we think makes us different? Because what makes us different one day won't the next, because somebody else can move into that space. Someone else can go, oh, that's really interesting. A few years later, I've hired all the faculty and staff, and now I am also in that space as well, you know.
So looking
at artificial intelligence,
looking outward.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm not saying don't look outward. Please, mm-hmm. you know, I hope that isn't the takeaway. Differentiation is important. It's just not a leading factor. I think the leading factor is, hey, here's who we are as an organization. This is what we aim to accomplish as an organization. This is our ultimate vision and the impact we hope to create. Here's how we're doing it differently. That is the second statement, the follow up, the details that we come up with, mm-hmm. but we lead with authenticity. And I think that currently marketing communications, I think we're leading with, or trying to lead with, differentiation. I mean, I hear all the time, well, anybody could say that, you know, that's the easiest, most trite feedback to give when it comes to communications. When you look at the most successful brands in the world, anybody could say anything they say on the front end, just do it, right? Like,
I guess anyone could say that.
Like a rock, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, look at almost Apple, think differently. Most successful company in the world, think different. Anybody could say that, you know? But that is a storytelling container. It's think different, and then let us show you how we think different. You know, it's just do it and let us show you what we mean by that. So I think lead with authenticity and then support it with differentiation.
You know, I know what you're talking about, because I had a similar experience. My college just launched their new campaign that they've been working on for a couple of years, but they went public, and I went to the celebration of that launch, and there were these circles over the plates at the dinner, and it had, you know, the college logo, but then there were words all the way around the logo, and I was reading them, and it was like intense, ambitious, determined. And it really spoke to me. I was like, I identify with those words. Did I find those words when I was at college, or was I always that way? And my experience there brought that out in me more, you know, it really got me thinking and it got me excited.
Yep. That's it. That is depth and weight. Right. And I think it's such an excellent philosophical, like, branding conversation is, you know, which was it, chicken or the egg?
Right.
And I think that, you know, as organizations, our job is to stoke the flame of those that are attracted to us, that, you know, people are attracted to deep authenticity. And so if we push out, like, here is who we are, and we're really putting our flag in the ground on this, you know, this is the impact we hope to create. This is why we exist as an organization. As Simon Sinek said, you know, start with why. If we put that out in the world, then the right folks will be attracted to that. And I, ironically, I think being authentic is different. that's the irony.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, because we're in such a differentiation obsessed, or just branding as a whole is so differentiation obsessed, that being authentic is really different. But yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, if instead that organization you're describing, Catherine, then said, hey, we're going to pump out what we think, you know, will make us most successful, you would have looked at those same, you would have looked at some totally different words and said, that doesn't resonate at all. But because of what you saw, I mean, you were even able to just reiterate what you read. And it was because it was so authentic. It was like, yeah, that's exactly who this organization is and was. And when I was a part of it, that's what I experienced as well.
Well, this has been so much fun. I think so often we consume branding and we are in and around campaigns, but we don't have the opportunity to talk with the creators of those. And so I really have enjoyed this conversation.
Thanks. Yeah, I have too. It's been such a pleasure getting to know you and following your career. Congrats on your success. And I didn't start by saying this, but let me end by saying, like, this is one of the top podcasts in the industry, and I'm honored that you asked us to be a part of it.
Of course, I can't let you go without asking.
Oh, here it is.
What do you know for sure?
Aside from what we talked about, I feel for sure what I'm testing for sure is what our firm is testing is around authenticity versus differentiation first and foremost. But I will say there's something to be said for belief, you know, for being able to see what an organization is doing and really buying in and believing in it and the power of belief. One of our favorite partners at Children's Hospital out of Miami, Nicholas Children's, we're working with them on a fundraising campaign. Their assistant vice president, Sarah Jolly, she has a children's book that talks about the Gruffalo. And short story is essentially, you know, it's a mouse going through the woods and all of the little creatures want to eat this mouse, you know. And mouse says, you can't eat me because I'm friends with the Gruffalo, you know. And all of a sudden the mouse gets to the end of the road and meets the Gruffalo. The Gruffalo is supposed to be a made up creature though. And the creature goes, I'm going to eat you. And mouse says, you can't eat me. All of the other creatures in the woods are scared of me, and takes the Gruffalo back to the woods. And the creature's like, oh my gosh, there he is. And the Gruffalo is like, oh my God, they are scared of him. And the book ends with the mouse sitting there just peacefully eating his lunch. And I think the moral to the story is that, you know, really, like, it's okay to kind of fake it till you make it, like, be bought in to believe, you know, and to align with the organization. And for that to come into focus, I think so much of the time campaigns are setting a vision for what could be, and it's not always grounded in our current reality, but that's not the point. The point of a campaign is to help us build what's possible. And it's always based on imagination. It's always based on ideas and vision. And so I think it is just so fundamentally important that as fundraisers, that as leaders, that we get bought in, that we weigh in so that it's authentic, it is aligned with us, but that we buy in to the belief to what is possible for the organizations that we support. So that is what I know for sure, Catherine.
Thank you so much, Chad. This was great.
Thanks. It's my pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in. If you're new to the podcast, I invite you to check out the Instagram page at devdebrief or connect with me on LinkedIn. I'd love to hear from you, and I am always taking suggestions for new guests. We are coming very close to the end of season 12. Next episode will be the final one, and I'm in the process of putting together a new slate of ideas. So if you have anything that you're itching to hear or learn more about, please reach out to me and let me know. In the meantime, good luck with starting the fresh year on a good note, and I look forward to connecting with you in the near future.
Hey listeners, it's Keith from Evertrue. Evertrue unlocks the potential of your entire donor pyramid. But how? Why, by giving fundraising teams the tools they need to personalize outreach at scale. Wow. And to inspire fundraising teams along the way, we offer Evertrue Studios, advancement's very first media hub. Evertrue Studios is like Netflix, but for advancement. And we publish new podcast and video content every week. It's all free and all created with fundraisers in mind. Subscribe for weekly content from the Development Debrief podcast and other advancement thought leaders at evertrue.com/studios.